And we are good to start.
All right. This is March the 3rd, 2017. We are interviewing Ruth Sweetser, the recently retired Director of Corporate Relations at IIT. Jointly conducting the interview is myself, Ralph Pugh, University Archivist, and Adam Strome, Director of University Archives and Special Collections. And Ruth, we're going to ask you to make a very brief 1 to 2 sentence description about your final position, if that title is not completely evocative of how you ended up here, and then we'll start the interview proper.
Thanks. It's so great to be here and have this opportunity. I really thank you all for this. My position, my final position with the university, with Director of Corporate Relations, is a position that does exist in some other universities and increasingly more so, but had not existed here before I claimed it or was appointed to it. And that was partly through the auspices of the person then that I reported to, Vice Provost Dennis Roberson. And since he came from industry, namely CTO at Motorola, he was familiar with this kind of interface and had actually worked with other universities in this way. And so the position itself is a bridging one. So the idea is to engage with business, not in a necessarily a development way or certainly not in a procurement way, but rather in an engagement way where there is benefit, perceived benefit and actual benefit, mutual benefit for the university and the group party person on the outside. And the way the engagement kind of breaks out is in very big chunks seen as a whole, because the whole university is what we're really trying to get a grasp on. And so the ways that the university, at least at this point, relate to business or engage with business is in terms of certainly hiring our students, and that includes the internships, the co-ops, other experiences with business and so on, and certainly full-time hiring. Another area is, of course, education, but that covers the waterfront, starting with brown bag lunches for current employees, for example, where somebody might come in from IIT, to PhDs for working professionals, or whatever it is, credit, not for credit. That's how that word education is defined in terms of engagement. A third area is student projects, a provision of student projects, where a company or an organization will work with the university, work with the needed people, faculty, etc. And IPRO, of course, is the prime example of that, the Interprofessional Project Program, where a company will provide a real-world, real-life challenge, problem, question, whatever it is, and work with the faculty within the university to design a semester-long experience for that multidisciplinary team, bringing that real-world experience. Something's happening. Something needs to happen. Something's wrong. We'd like to improve this. Have you ever worked with such and such? Those kinds of things. And that the student team then would have a provide a solution or solutions at the end of the 16-week semester. It's not a contracted deliverable, as other universities sometimes have, but rather a solution or a statement of something that the company, because the company has been involved all along, finds to be of value currently or potential value. And the fourth area broadly is research, and that includes many levels, even stemming from IPRO sometimes, but more so with the graduate students, especially PhD students, and then of course our faculty, working with researchers in companies, in the national laboratories, although they probably do that without the help of corporate relations. But there are a number of opportunities that might fall under the research rubric, and we are open to exploring all of them. And just to kind of wrap that all up, that means that we're working corporate relations as an office, as and me as a person, working with two audiences simultaneously. The audience inside the university, which either wants something or is a potential partner, and the business organization, whatever it might be on the outside, bringing them together for an opportunity. It's not a corporate relations responsibility to ensure that that opportunity is enacted. That's, of course, up to the parties in play.
Sure.
So it is a new effort at the university to try to pull together all of these assets, which of course various places within the university have been doing for quite a while, mm-hmm. but without the benefit of knowing necessarily what others are doing within the university, without the benefit of intentional leveraging of the kinds of things that we find from business. So mm-hmm. it's a nascent effort and one that may flourish or not, but it was a privilege to be able to kind of get it started.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you for that excellent overview
more than
statement. And we look forward to teasing out details and anecdotes about that. As Adam and I went through your papers and also looked at LinkedIn for you and all manner of other things, one thing that struck me and I wanted to start off with, and we'll do this at least starting off somewhat chronologically, is to really start off with you as a person. You're a graduate of Hope College, 1967. I'm a graduate of Kalamazoo College.
Okay.
I understand the world of the small southwestern Michigan liberal arts schools. Mm-hmm. And when I went through, and certainly when you went through as well, and very much an emphasis on educating the entire person and then your position within society. Mm-hmm. And I imagine from what I know of you already that very much is something we need to touch on in terms of your education, your attitudes about learning and society, and how that positioned you for your career. So start off with that.
Okay.
Hope College onward.
So you want...
you don't need all the details of your
right.
education. We know that you are in German language and literature and whatnot. But how did your decisions as an undergraduate and graduate inform your career, your
mm-hmm.
education, how did that inform mm-hmm. your career, and your
mm-hmm.
personal ethos?
Mm-hmm. The undergrad experience was very wonderful. It was challenging. It was, of course, unique and different. Different people, different culture, both within the college and surrounding community. And I had come from the Milwaukee area.
Mm-hmm.
Just opportunities like you wouldn't believe for not only learning under very smart faculty, but faculty who really took an interest in the students. And I probably didn't, it wasn't in those days, it wasn't as common to go to a faculty member or learn from them in an informal sense and so on, but certainly that did happen to a certain extent. And given the first year or two, I went there intending to be a psych major because I was interested not so much in the testing and so on arena, but in the guidance area of whatever that, however that might play out.
Yeah.
And it was clear things that. And that's an interesting parallel I never thought of till right now. At Hope, the psych department and others are very technically oriented. In other words, science-based and so on. And so I found myself wanting to do that, but not necessarily drawn to the very rigorous, structured scientific approach. And so I went through statistics and all of the kinds of things that would prepare me. And then I realized I wanted to see the world in a broader way. And what? How can I do that? And kind of that's how deciding on a German major was influenced by my family background, my interest in music, where there was that piece. Coming from Milwaukee, it's hard to escape Schlitz beer or whatever it might be that was a framing. And then I realized when I had a chance to go on Hope College Vienna Summer School Program, which was a standing program that had begun not all that long, I realized after the fact, sometime in the early 60s, headed up by Dr. Paul Fried, who was on the faculty at Hope but had been an interpreter at the Nuremberg trials, and whose family had gone through the Nazi purging and
sure.
so on. So
sure.
lots of connections. Went to the Vienna Summer School, was a 6-week program in Vienna at the university through the auspices of the Institute for European Studies, which now has the same acronym but a different name.
Okay.
And that was preceded by a 2+ week tour that we had a choice, either an economic/politically oriented tour, and that was at the time we would say behind the Iron Curtain, and I just so wanted to go on that. The other one was an art and architecture focused tour, which was basically France, Germany, Austria, and I knew that that would benefit my major, and so I opted for that. But as a kind of a way to make up for that loss, for the 6 weeks in Vienna, in the middle of that, we had a long weekend, and so I went to Prague and had a chance to get behind the Iron Curtain. And the group had also initially gone to Berlin, which at that point meant West Berlin, and had a chance to go through Checkpoint Charlie, through the Untergrundbahn, a whole lot of things, which in those times, that was 66.
Yes, that's before the Prague Spring.
Oh, yes, quite. And lots of artifacts, relics, damaged buildings, grayness, all of that.
Yeah.
So that was a huge, huge boost to my understanding of how I could use perhaps my education, my degree, and so on. And so that in itself played a role in my wanting to go to grad school and choosing to do so in German language and literature, and went from there.
Okay, excellent, excellent. German is such a lingua franca for the sciences and whatnot,
well,
and the cultural aspects
and
whatnot. So.
I run into it still.
Yeah, good.
And so how would you characterize your transition from being a German major to kind of ending up in your first position? I guess you started out at the Midwest College of Engineering, which then became kind of an IIT position. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I feel like this is always the interesting question, like tracking someone's career arc.
I was going to say, you won't believe.
Yeah, how did you make it then from being the German major to working at the Midwest College of Engineering?
Well, how many hours?
As long as it takes. This will go forever.
Okay, I had taught German at Barrington High School, and then as our two boys were born, I took time to be a full-time mom. And but at the same time, just looking at opportunities, wanting to be part of the community, wanting to do something useful, especially my mind at that time went to teaching, of course. So I ended up teaching in the aquatics program for the local YMCA. And that had all kinds of ramifications. Our own kids got to learn to swim early, met a whole variety of other people and other ways, and ultimately led to my husband wanting also, along with my husband, wanting to have us certified in scuba. So, you know, it just opened a variety of doors. It also opened another door, which is related to my background in German teaching, and that is that the Y at that time had, one of its members was an occupational therapist, and she had recently, for whatever reason, come across the idea that the hemispheres of the brain had strong connections and interactions, and especially in foreign language learning. I think at the time there was an interest in that. I can't specifically remember that it was important for U.S. students to learn languages. Because I had come off, sidebar, I had come off the grad school piece and through an NDEA Institute fellowship and been in, you know, just because the government and others felt it was so important to be versed in other languages and so on. But anyway, back to the why, and the person on the board who thought that it would just be wonderful if, because as she had learned, languages are learned best at a very young age, that the Y would offer to the community something that we ended up calling German for Kids, and asked if I was interested, and sure I was, you know. And so that was something that came out, and I think I did that for three seasons, and it was for kids 5 to 7, and it was totally activity-based. There, if they sat down at all, or, you know, had to sit down and pay attention, it was because they had a treat or a drink, which we also worked into German. But everything else was activity, to learn that way. And because that seemed to be going well after the first year or two, they also instituted a Spanish for Kids program through the same auspice. And so that went on, not for a long time. I think it was 4 years total that I did that. And then as the kids were getting older and other things were happening, a neighbor and I were talking, and she had not been a teacher, but she had been full-time in business. And so we were thinking maybe we could job share somehow. And so that's the kernel of the idea that ended up having us, and I don't remember other than driving by, because Midwest College of Engineering is less than a mile from our home.
Okay.
And seeing it, not knowing what in the world it was, thinking, well, and maybe there was something advertised for a part-time registrar position. I really don't know anymore. But she and I thought that, well, let's go and see what they want, and maybe we can work out something. Because she had two children, one of whom was just the age between our two sons. And so, you know, we spent time, and we did that. And it turned out that she became a part-time registrar, and I became part-time director of business administration, just for a number of reasons which aren't all that important. And that's the position then that I was in at the time of the merger. That's, I guess, what they're calling it. IIT acquired Midwest, actually.
All right. So those, you were there for, according to your LinkedIn, you were there from 83 to 86 before the merger.
Right. It was more like a year and a half, because I had one preliminary position. I just pick it up with my director of business administration, you know.
Okay.
So there was a little bit before that, and then a year and a half for, you know, director of business administration.
Great. How was the transition in the merger? So you were continued over. How many others were continued over? How did the process go?
Oh, interesting. Overall, clearly, it was successful, as everything. It has its starts and fits and ups and downs. The college had been founded in the 1970s, I think, by faculty member, Dr. Todd, a faculty member of IIT. In electrical and computer engineering, at that time, EE department. And he felt that the typical university experience for students was and faculty was way too much of a, what do they call it, white tower? No, ivory tower experience. And he felt so strongly that he decided to establish a separate university that had as faculty only those people who were either working currently in industry in their field or recently had done so. And so that was the premise, so it was a small initiative, not long standing, and by the time I got there, he had died, and his wife was the administrator and so on, and so she's the one who hired my neighbor and me at the time.
Oh, excellent.
And there's a lot more, because then, you know, we were there for a little while, then IIT came in and acquired it, and that entailed the move to IIT felt that that campus, which is very small and was kind of makeshift to begin with, would not serve their purposes, and so arranged a lease agreement with the College of DuPage. And so we were there for 4 years as IIT West, during which time then the plans for the Rice campus materialized and so on.
Excellent. And did the founding ethos of the Midwest College of Engineering, did that get did that transition as after the merger, or did IIT kind of discard that in and opt for something a little more similar to what they were doing here?
From what I gathered, and I was not involved in the highest deliberations, but it seemed that there was really no interest by IIT in much of anything that was, it was an asset that they wanted to acquire.
Okay.
Interesting. But yes, it's a great issue to follow up, because what you're saying about that founding ethos of the Midwest College is very much what your operation out there tended up toward in terms of collaboration and checking in with business frequently at various levels in terms of education and other things, sharing back and forth fluidly. So,
well, a lot of the Midwest College of Engineering students were working part-time in industry.
Okay.
And
so that determined things as well.
And classes were evenings. I mean, it just all kind of went together.
Okay. That answers so much just with that. So you're assistant director at the Rice campus from 86 to 92, and then 92 is the Rice campus, or is it 91, the naming?
The Rice campus was dedicated, I believe, in December of 90.
90,
right?
Okay.
And so essentially started operations in 91, but
okay. Yeah, one thing we've noticed going through your files is that you're still hopping back and forth, though, right? You're doing things on main campus, or at least meeting people at main campus for the centennial. You're quite intimately involved with the IIT centennial. You have any interesting anecdotes to tell about that?
No, there were so many disparate things that I felt compelled to and want, in a good way, to participate in and try and be aware of and so on, that for a time it's kind of a blur.
Okay. Because okay, that's all right.
And I didn't I didn't have any significant role other than making sure that documents from Midwest College and IIT West were available for anybody who wanted to have them as part of the 100th. But it's okay. Always interesting, depending on who's talking and what purpose they have. Sometimes they'll include Midwest College in their discussions, and many times they won't. It was a small operation, and it was accredited, but I don't think that it was anything that IIT faculty and leaders felt particularly proud of. Mm-hmm. You know, they looked at it as a business deal that would help benefit them. But often when they talked about how IIT was formed in between 40 and 45, mm-hmm. that they named the College of Architecture coming in under new leadership, they named the law school and so on, but did not mention Midwest College for a number of reasons, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's not included in the coat of arms that sort of founding years or whatnot.
It's kind of an outlier.
Yeah, yeah.
So it sounds like another thing we found in your files was the interesting article in, I can't remember which Chicago paper it was, about how that corridor along the highway, the 290 corridor, was going to rival Silicon Valley someday.
Was it 88
corridor? Or I-88, yeah, I'm
right.
Sorry, yes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it sounds like at some point maybe there this might have been kind of a Hail Mary, as kind of IIT saying, well, hey, if this works out, then we've got our foothold here. And I believe there's even a folder in your papers entitled Turf Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting to hear that they primarily viewed this as a business transaction. But it seems like you know, IIT had some skin in the game in terms of making sure that other people weren't encroaching on their territory and that sort of thing. But it, in your eyes, that was primarily just, you know, sort of a business concern.
I think so. Part of what drove it was the fact that I don't want to misstate the percentage, but it probably was at least 50% of IIT students, especially in the IIT West interim, I'll call it, were from Bell Labs, you know, which is right down the road, AT&T Bell Labs, and that joined Lucent and, you know, Alcatel and all went forward. But so there was a good chunk of people who already were students at IIT, working professional students, and so this would serve them better and potentially serve people like them working in this Illinois Research and Development Corridor, such as it was called, working professionals who then could come. Because at the time we had, of course, IITV, but the internet was yet to be recognized, and I know it existed in DARPA in California, but nobody was thinking of those in those terms. So we had both the proximity for live participation as well as the distance ed, and seemed like a good mix. And that was an audience that knew about IIT. I think I might have mentioned that it was very hard going because there weren't that many other places and professionals that who's this, you know, IIT, and, you know, what are they trying to do? And
okay. Yeah, Ruth, I guess this is a good point to ask. Adam and I have heard, and there's indications, but it's sort of a very nebulous sort of thing, about up to the end of the 1980s, main campus was having a hard time in terms of finances and sense of direction and whatnot. It was between the two mayor dailies, the university had lost its connections with the city government and its political connections and whatnot. And we understand, and this is good to be able to speak with somebody who was at that point and was there, is it fair to say that West Campus was seen as some sort of a potential backup for moving the entire university, or is that a misconception?
From my position, which was not privy to those kinds of discussions, I would say no. I would say it was an effort to recognize where their potential students, clients were, and to get closer to them. Because, for example, while Bell Labs had so many in classes, and that grew, of course, exponentially once we were close by, but anybody in any of the businesses there had to come to the main campus. And there were other schools, especially Northern Illinois University and so on, which were offering what might have been viewed as comparable courses. A working professional has exigencies, and that is that takes priorities. If you work all day, you want to go to a named school, but you have to drive an hour and a half in traffic, and another school, which isn't quite as highly ranked, is 15 minutes down the road, what are you going to do? And so there was that whole mix. And so I think they truly saw it as a way to grow the university. I think there was kind of flip talk going around about, well, if the main campus goes to hell in a handbasket, then we can always use the vice campus.
But it was no more than just that sort of talk.
I think it was the major aim. Because then in the 90s, of course, they had that national commission.
Right. Yeah. Which is another one of our questions, is that when the national commission occurs and so much resource and attention is focused here, and it basically starts IIT as we know it now. What are the echoes and the ramifications for West Campus?
Well, I think they were the same and more intensified than they had been. IIT has done excellent things for its size and certainly for its age, and people are very proud of those things, and they kind of hang on to those things and want to have them known. However, sometimes, many times, and it varies from decade to decade, there is almost an overemphasis on how much these Marvin cameras, you know, kinds of inventions and mm-hmm. so on mean, and mm-hmm. how many mm-hmm. people know about them. And just because you know about them, does that mean that you're going to regard the entire university as some place that you, you know, really want to attend or be involved in, mm-hmm. and so on? Mm-hmm. And so there was some of that.
Yes.
Because there were these efforts then to reinvigorate, and because I think in almost any university since I've been able to learn this, I didn't know this way back when, but it's, you know, see and be seen are the most important things. So if you're a faculty member and you're constantly out at the West Campus, that's not going to help your career. And to be honest, there weren't that many... there were adjunct faculty coming from business and industry to teach out there, and others would go out there eventually. But it was very much like, well, you're at the edge of the world, and if you know, we have to come out there twice a week, and you know, it was very much not maybe in terms of the senior administration board's point of view, I don't know what that was, but in terms of the people who would make it happen, the faculty and mm-hmm. others, mm-hmm. it was an opportunity, but mm-hmm. with provisions.
Okay. All right.
And so you said there were adjunct faculty working in industry, so mm-hmm. you were kind of using the surrounding industries both as a source of students mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. of teachers.
Not to interrupt, but of course, ABET accreditation, all the accreditations require a certain percentage of full-time faculty. So
right.
I don't mean to give the impression that it was all adjuncts, okay. or primarily adjuncts.
And okay. and so this kind of leads into something that Ralph and I had wanted to ask. So... obviously, in your position, you were kind of interfacing with the local businesses a fair bit. And we were wondering how much, you know, especially during those formative years, but really throughout your tenure, how much was your position kind of IIT having a formulated approach to kind of dealing with the industries around it? Or how much were you kind of reacting and responding to the desires or the ideas or just the needs as industry surrounding the Rice campus presented them?
5%, 95%.
Okay. So really...
I could be off by a few percent.
Yeah. Okay. But so your position was much more about going out and saying, what do you want, what do you need, and how can we provide that? And then...
it's how I leveraged my position. Because as associate director of the Rice campus, clearly I was helping the director who had the logistics and academics and everything else, you know, and then when Ed Steuben was VP, then there was, you know, another layer. But my job was to ensure that the campus worked.
Mm-hmm.
And that I programmed the phones. I was in charge of the computer lab persons. Who had we had took them to the local bank so that they could take the computer runs and mm-hmm. have a second copy off site.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
uh-huh.
got people stuck in called the fire department when people got stuck in the elevator. Went to the Wheaton Police Department when
uh-huh.
somebody was caught at 3 a.m. Trying to what they thought was break in or do some damage or something or the other. So
uh-huh.
you know, formulating stuff. What happens if somebody calls up and like they did, they threatened a bomb threat or somebody said they were going to kill me. Or, yeah, I mean, it was anything and everything. I didn't determine anything with academics, but I tried to leverage, you know, what I knew about the program and so
mm-hmm.
on to the extent that. I think one of the articles, whether you have it or not, I was being interviewed, I think, when I went to associate director, and I said, the job is much more than rearranging chairs.
Mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
so, you know,
mm-hmm.
you could take it at that. You know, you can make sure the floors are clean and blah, blah, but
mm-hmm.
I saw it as a larger opportunity.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of keen to start off with your liberal arts education, because it seems like, obviously, a German language professional or like a philosophy major is not going to expect to find a great philosophy job somewhere, but you still have a kind of a more of a holistic way of looking at things, and it seems like you were content to wear all the different hats, knowing that you could leverage them in certain sorts of ways. And as you say in your LinkedIn, you can see the big picture, but also the path and how to get there. And that sort of balancing of a bigger picture with a practical, you know, we'll take this step by step and then we'll get there. So,
and I thought everybody did that. And over the years I've come, you know, and I depended on that in dealing with people early on, that they were, but they are not.
Everyone's different. Yeah. Everyone's different. Yeah. Everyone doesn't have the same ethos. But approach to,
yeah.
to work and, yeah. and how you tie that together. But that's the sort of thing we want to get at in these interviews, because everybody's motivated. And we're interviewing people here, not just simply people who held a certain position.
Interesting. Okay.
So, yeah.
Do you think then that your approach was kind of a novel one within the structure of a technology-based university?
Oh, yes, and I was reminded of that in many ways. Not, you know, what are you doing that for? Or, you know, and I certainly could justify it, and if there was a time when I couldn't, or if somebody just wasn't willing to see that, then, you know, all right, I'll go a different direction. You know, so.
This might be a good point. We want to bring in your position as a woman in this. Mm-hmm. And obviously a lot of these disciplines are very male-dominated, and all manner of cultures that are kind of set in their own trammels and whatnot. So, yes, you end up as chairperson of the AA at UW for 4 years, 2005 to 2009. We're not jumping ahead chronologically that far, but, you know,
okay.
This is something certainly that you've done fairly recently. How not only the liberal arts, but also what's your sense of mission in terms of being a woman in this field in a tech university environment?
I didn't realize that it would end up that way, but it was mm-hmm. fairly apparent that, first of all, there weren't that many women, even starting with Midwest College of Engineering. There were a few in... but certainly not what there might be at liberal arts college and so on. And it wasn't so apparent. I gradually, you know how you do. When you work in an environment, you start realizing things, but it takes a while, and you think, why is that happening? Or, you know, and so on.
Yeah.
So it really was apparent that, first of all, faculty felt no compunction to respond to or acknowledge anything that non-faculty said.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. so, and then on top of it, because I think there were very few women administrators, and I really didn't interact with them a whole bunch, mm-hmm. that there were times when these people were very dismissive, and I didn't attribute it to my being a woman. I attributed it to being staff and rather new, and also coming from Midwest College of Engineering, which maybe, you know, wasn't the most illustrious background. So, but there were things happening all along in that I was aware of, primarily, I think, now when I look back, because of AAUW and how in 1983 they were working to up the Equal Pay Act of 1963 under that Kennedy did. And just, you know, just things that other people kind of were oblivious to, and that's fine, because why would they know?
Mm-hmm.
And so these issues that I was fortunate enough to be able to have brought in front of me, and the legislation behind it and what's going on. And I have to acknowledge my husband in that regard too, because he worked for the U.S. Department of Labor in the Office of Federal Contract Compliance for 30 years. And they, of course, were working with federal businesses, corporate, many a larger size corporations, in terms of fair pay and hiring practices and all of that. And so that put me in touch with many of the regulations that I might not otherwise have been aware of. And certainly once I started to understand the disparate treatment in some cases, and the issues that came up and still come up, mm-hmm. you know, and now we recognize yeah. unconscious bias, and yeah. heaven knows all these other things. That doesn't mean that they change overnight, but okay. back then mm-hmm. there wasn't even a recognition of that.
Yes.
And
yes.
so that gradually came along, and I think AUW and its research, which actually had been going on since the late 1800s, but in a less pointed way, a less of an agenda. Now we have a research agenda, so that research is continually coming out every year and a half, year, 2 years, whatever, mm-hmm. On topics that relate to women, girls first. I don't know if you've looked at the AUW website, but Shortchanging Girls, Shortchanging America came out in 1991, and that was a focus on education and girls' experience in the classroom and how that differed and why, and so
yeah.
on and on.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't know, now I've lost the track of
your
question.
That's good.
But
no, it's in terms of your commitment to women within mm-hmm. academia and mm-hmm. Schools like this. So you're board chair from 2005 to 2009, but I assume you'd been a member for a few decades before. When do you get yourself involved in that organization?
When?
Yes.
It was the 1973.
All right.
And that was at the local
okay.
level. And, of
okay.
course, you start there, and then you mm-hmm. don't realize, you know, the whole picture for quite a while.
Okay.
But then I started having other positions and at the local level and state level, and then a national committee chair position, and then went from there.
Okay. So you're involved for decades
pretty
in
much.
That. So
mm-hmm.
Excellent. Good.
Well, so I guess, mm-hmm. you know, jumping back towards our chronology then, so you moved from being the assistant director of the university to then you moved a little more fully into corporate relations.
Right. It wasn't called that, but I went from being associate director at the Rice campus to working, I think that's how it went, to reporting to Muhammad Shahidipur, who was graduate dean and also had responsibility for IITV, as it was called at the time,
mm-hmm.
and of course corporate sites were part of that. And so that was the first time when I really started out of necessity. I couldn't do my job if I didn't work with businesses to identify these other sites. The other prior things were things I saw as opportunities. Nobody mandated it. Nobody
mm-hmm.
really cared.
mm-hmm.
But this was a place. And then I went from working for Mohammed to working for Ali Chinar, who is vice president, provost for research. And, of course, for his considerations and his office, that meant our grad students or faculty working with either other faculty at other universities or national labs or business or whatever, and trying to ferret out what that meant and how that happened. You know, most of the time faculty just found their own partners, and but they, you know, the time that it takes and everybody, you know, one of the major ways still for faculty to meet research or find research opportunities is attending professional events. Well, how many can you afford time-wise, money-wise, and how do they pay off, and so on. So this was an effort to tighten the ability to attract or find opportunities. And so each thing was a learning experience,
mm-hmm.
and one was with education in the companies for TV.
Mm-hmm.
Under Ali was more for the research.
Under Ali was from 92 to 97, is
mm-hmm.
that the
mm-hmm.
period? And then you move on to Director of Professional Learning and Business Relations in 97.
Right.
Okay, all right.
And so to shift focus just for a second to IITV, because that's something that I feel like everyone kind of knows that it existed, but I feel like nobody knows a whole lot about it. So was IITTV was up and running by the time you kind of came on the scene?
75.
Okay.
75 to 76, as I understand it, because I wasn't here.
Right. But then you kind of jumped into the middle of setting up opportunities for IIT-TV.
Right, and there, Holly Pryor Harris had, who's still here, okay. had been working to some degree, and I'm not so sure how Mohammed, then, as graduate dean, it makes sense that he inherited or had oversight for IITV because a lot of the working professionals would enroll at the graduate level in courses. And so, but how they came about connecting with the companies that already had sites before I came on board, Holly would probably have some memories of that, and there probably a lot of different things that happened there. But my job was to increase that number because they had started to decline mm-hmm. the numbers for a variety of reasons.
Were there other? I know there was competition for actually having a footprint in the western suburbs at the time. Were there other universities doing something similar in terms of that distance education?
Not really, and that's why IIT, I think, didn't get on board with the internet in as fast a way as recognizing its potential mm-hmm. and using that as maybe some of the other universities that have presence or had presence in the suburbs. It just was an infrastructure that had served well, had put us in the lead, had used technology befitting a technological university, and served to solidify relationships with business where technology was practiced. And so there were, you know, when you're invested in something and fairly heavily and it's working, mm-hmm. and of course the technology, as we know now especially, but wasn't, I don't know that they understood at the time that you set this whole system up, but it's going to change. It's going to, and, you know,
yeah. mm-hmm.
the longer it existed, the more changes there were. So by the time I was selling sites, the internet had already emerged, and people were saying, well, I think we're going to, you know, we got all this stuff, you know, and it still wasn't real. It was only real time. It was not asynchronous.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
for working professionals, that was a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
Did I answer your question?
No, you did. You did.
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah.
And so you think, just to continue in this vein for just another moment, so you think that maybe IIT hung on to that kind of mode of delivery a little longer than they would have otherwise, because it was kind of their thing.
Was their thing. They could boast about it. I don't know how much, how many resources were available to change course.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was definitely an issue. And Louise Hewitt, her name I think may have come up. She was director of IITV for much of the time that I was working with the operations. And the FCC was looking at channels that were allotted to educational institutions, and there were a whole lot of details which I don't remember now very well,
mm-hmm.
but that was kind of the writing on the wall, that, you know, these channels would be limited, but you had to show full use for 2 years or things like that, and if you did, then there was a way of turning them over to back to the FCC for quite a bit of money, because they were looking for those frequencies and channels. But then, if that's the case, then what does IIT use, and so on? And to develop, I understand the dilemma. You have this working kind of thing, which has been quite a successful thing, and then here there's a totally different system, which is emerging and, you know, with limited resources, what
mm-hmm.
do you do?
Yeah, right. Kind of classic moments that come and to being able to respond to them.
Yeah.
But I would guess that in your more, you know, since 95% of your job was being responsive to the needs of the businesses around you, I would assume that at a certain point they started saying, you know, where the future is here. When can you deliver us there?
Yeah, it happened very gradually and sporadically, as you can imagine, and it always was, I would, from Louise to, there was another director of IITV, and even Lauren, you know, just trying to figure out why can't we deliver these especially professional learning courses and so on. We've got to do that, even with old technology, but I think people running the operation understood the need, but when you've got a lot of competing needs for money and attention and so on, it always came down, well, do what you can with what you got.
Okay. Yeah. In terms of all those moments occurring and those, you know, surging forwards, what were the innovations, either technologically or programmatically or a mix of the two, that are kind of most memorable for you, or most that you're most proud of, you know, things that actually did sort of happen, either planned or accidentally, that you kind of look back at with particular fondness?
Well, there are a whole bunch that, you know, I was never involved in because I didn't have to be, but in terms of the internet, I think one of the, I became aware of it in 1994 when Mark Andreessen from the University of Illinois designed the interface for the internet so that common people with no knowledge of coding could actually access it and use it. Before that, people at DARPA and other agencies had been using it, but it was really, everybody had to know how to code and use it that way. So when I became aware of that, then that was through a business presentation. It was like an Alexander Graham Bell moment. I mean, I don't care if no one else has it right now. Like, no one else has a phone. The joke is, Alexander, why are you doing this? Who are you going to call? No one else has a phone. You know, it was going to be, you know, if not next week, then next month or very soon that this was going to go public, because it already was in operation in terms of the scientific side of things, research side. So I put together a course on just what is the internet and how to use it, and I think there's probably a brochure in the stuff that was there about that, and somebody else who was, and because my role really wasn't continuing ed, I fostered it, you know, or just called attention to it and tried to engage, but it wasn't to design it. And so a person to remain unnamed at the Rice campus thought that I was impinging on that territory, and so took all the brochures and threw them away. So, you know, we still pursued that, and we started with educators because that seemed to be something that they would want to know about, regardless of their... because then they had resources to access and ways to teach students that otherwise they wouldn't have had. And so it kind of went from there, and it quickly grew out of, grew beyond something that I could really deal with. I mean, I understood fundamentally the technology, but my whole idea was how can we use it? How can we tap it for the furthering of the university and education here, and how others as well. I mean, it was like the telephone. If we, only our students have it, you know, where are they going to go? Anyway, so we wanted to broaden this, and pretty soon it didn't take, it was maybe 6 months to a year before other entities were offering their own kind, especially the Office of Regional Education in DuPage. And, you know, for all teachers K through 12 and, you know, other universities were not sitting by idly watching this whole happen. And so it went very quickly to where, but for a while, for maybe 6 to 9 months, IIT was the leader, and actually one of the, Ray Trigstad, who is now on board with the IIT program, was hired specifically to teach some of these early, early courses about, you know, familiarizing people with what the internet is.
Excellent. When we process your material in depth, we've got to look for that rare brochure and perhaps put it on exhibit at some point and whatnot.
Well.
But no, it's exactly what we were looking for in terms of those sort of moments that you're able to identify and to try to move things forward.
Sure,
so.
Sure.
That it's kind of like feeds into another question we have, which basically this the same. What accomplishment during your tenure at IIT are you most proud of? I mean, we can continue along that line, but more generally.
Sure.
You know, other points of which you're very proud of having affected change or move things along.
Well, in terms of the, I'll go back to the course in technology, but there's been an intersection with AAUW almost all along.
Okay.
AAUW events being held at the campus, AAUW programming available to our students, but now for a number of years, I would say at least 5-7 years, IIT has committed to sending at least 4 young women students to one of the AAUW national events, annual events, National Conference for College Women Student Leaders. And we are, at least I think still, I don't know if it'll continue now that I'm gone, but an institutional member of AAUW, and that was, there are at least 900 universities and colleges nationwide that are institutional members, meaning that they participate with a small membership fee, a couple hundred dollars, but then one way or another make known or try to make known to their students. And it's primarily women, but men are never excluded if they want to participate.
Mm-hmm.
These not only off-campus kinds of things, but things that can be offered here. And we had a training for one of the these kinds of things called Start Smart, which is a workshop, maybe a half-day, 3 to 4 hour workshop for students who are going to be going out into the world of work, applying for jobs, and what it takes to understand what they need to be looking for, what they need to be asking for, if there are negotiations involved. That, but you know, what's your budget? You wouldn't be, you'd be surprised how many students, women students, that's what I know more about, but they really misestimate, you know, what they're, you know, going to need, because costs vary considerably across the United States. That's, you know, first of all, and then what does it mean if you haven't been living on your own? What does it take? And then how does that figure into your job? You may, you know, love this job, but it pays half, exaggeration, of what you're going to need to live on, and also what are you going to do? So that awareness and kind of providing them with tools to go out and find a job that and a salary that will meet their expectations, or at least if they can't do that, then adjust your expectations and so on. And so those kinds of interventions, I guess, or making available these opportunities and learning, I count as important for students. Now, you ask students, and probably 1 in 50 would even know about AAUW, even though we're a member. And that's because the people who might want to take ownership of this kind of thing have so many other things, and maybe they don't come out of a background that helps them understand how important some of these things are, and 100 reasons, and that's fine. But I count it as, you ask me what do I count, and I'm still on the AAUW side. There are 1 or 2 other things on the university side per se, but that may not loom as large as I would like to think it would, but it was something that IIT did not have, and now it has. And so however they use it, I think can only be to the good. And the other thing, of course, is gradually, and I found this, it's no big deal really, but it's from 1998, and it's the Business and Industry Gateway, which is one of the early kind of ideas of gathering together links where the 4 big areas that I sketched out are all in here, but they're not, they're, it's kind of mix and match. program delivery, career development center, research center, sponsored research, you know, that kind of thing, but designed for business to tap into, identified as something for them. And so that, and there was material too, a little bit about something called the Biz Group, B-I-Z. If you've seen it, you may come upon it, but it, I think it was subsequent to this, and it was an attempt, and IHNR was great about allowing me some latitude in terms of trying to design things or you know, do new things. And it was a recognition, the Biz Group was really the same people that now are included in the Matrix organization for corporate relations, not same persons, but same positions, people who dealt with the outside, business and industry, and with whom are you working? Can we leverage that? What are you learning? Can you, you know, all those kinds of things to, and that's how universities that have corporate relations, whether or not development is included in that or not, and in probably 75 or more percent of the cases it is, it doesn't have to be, but the idea is to get an institution, an organization-wide view of what's going on with business. So I went beyond what you asked.
Oh, no, always excellent. Yeah, we're kind of at the point of trying to maybe get some big picture, bigger picture questions. Going over maybe the 25 years or whatnot, the culture of business in Illinois, Chicago Metro, and how a place like IIT is sort of navigating those waters. What sort of big picture changes did you see in a period from like 1990 up until present? Maybe that's almost too big of a question.
Yeah,
I'm sure you
it is, just because I wasn't working at that
certain
level
those levels, yeah.
Until more in the 2000 range.
That's true.
IIT has had the fortune of knowing key people, whether it's the first Mayor Daley or then the second Mayor Daley, ultimately.
Yeah.
There was probably a gap in there, but having that and Bobby Rush and, you know, other contacts who had the well-being of the university at heart has, and I'm sure you heard a lot of this from David Baker, those key relationships were important. How much those relationships could be leveraged despite, you know, incredible effort on the part of people here is a different story.
Exactly. Matter of fact, the question was just out of my lips, and even before you mentioned David's name, I remembered in terms of Adam and I speaking with him a few months ago, and he said the board has always been here a remarkable resource, and it's been an issue of the institution being able to utilize the board and to utilize all the variety of things that it represented and all the connections within Chicago's business and commercial and universe. And so seems like the place has had greater success in utilizing that resource.
And the board, one of the faculty members who has since moved on at the vice provost level said he realized after trying to get some things done, that the board, the model for the board, it seems to be, and I'm just quoting him because I was, you know, prevented from talking to board members.
Okay.
It was to get, you know, a number of heavy hitters who could individually contribute, and especially I think that comes from Pritzker Galvin. You know, that was the model there, and so they kind of continued looking for these stars and get them on the board, and maybe their energy or vision failed them in understanding that only goes so far. I mean, these people, you know, did the match, the $250 million, all great, great stuff, but it's not enough. And they were not equipped to push the university into the various corners, if you will, and multiple places that it really needs to be. And that's what I kept running into. If I'd go to selling IITV, you know, there were companies, even though they may have had a couple people in one of our grad programs, they never heard of us. They never heard, and they were in the same city, and probably have been in the same city for, I don't know, 20, 40 years. Okay. And that, it's a matter of resources, and I get it. There's only so much you can do, but I think there could have been more done, and the model for the board might, and people are mentioning you might want to change that so that, you know, you have visible people and big givers, but there's a ton of people on the board. If you go into the website, you know, it's, but how many of them are out there, you know, purposely finding contacts that now in, you know, 2015, 2020 are going to know about the university and take it as a cause and so on. And so, it's been a mixed bag, and I see it more so, and maybe it looms larger for me than it really should, just because I'm dealing with it, but I constantly ran into people who didn't know anything about the university. Mm-hmm. And so I always would start a conversation with the Illinoisans, have you heard of IIT? Mm-hmm. And so that would elicit certain things. Well, yeah, IIT. Yeah, I've heard of it, but that was, you know, skin deep. That was, you know. And that's still the case with ITT Technical Institute closing. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't believe the number of calls that came in. Same. I'm sorry, what's going on?
We all did, yeah.
And a friend of mine, this is what was really crushing, not really, but she said, how are you doing now that the campus is closed? So all
it's
along
like how many years have you known me? That's right.
Exactly. And so the what I see as a limiting factor is that the board and everybody else thought because of, you know, certain progress and certain fabulous things that have happened, but they're here and here and here and here, that everybody now knows about Illinois Institute of Technology and holds it in high regard.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, it's interesting. I think you can probably say this about any number of universities, but IIT is, I think all of us in various positions see all the marvelous potential, and it's, but none of us are in a position to do much besides do our work well. But you still learn about the missed synergies that could potentially move things forward.
Potential is what caused me to, way back with Midwest College, the synergy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was very practical too. I have a job. Do I want to keep a job? Well, yeah, I do. But was the the potential, and you know, because after learning a bit about the university, you could, you know, tell possibly that it, you know, and I use the same word 30 years later, the potential. It hasn't realized its potential. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I think that's, we hear you. We hear you.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you obviously had a different perspective than a lot of these people, because you are, you know, out in the community, speaking to businesses, talking to people in various industries. Do you think their view of IIT kind of shifted over the time that you were having these conversations, or was it kind of a steady level of like, oh yeah, that place?
I have to say that the reactions are that pretty much that, partly because the city has grown. I mean, we're talking about how many businesses that were here 30 years ago don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. How many are new? How many people under the age of X, you know, haven't had a chance to learn about that are coming in or dealing, because we're more national, international, not in our student body, but in dealings and how we actually intersect with them. Mm-hmm. I think efforts like 1871 and some of the other kinds of things where interfacing with built worlds, for example, which was one of the things that I was doing, it's a slow go, but it affords, if you're at 1871 and, you know, the city youth, if you will, and entrepreneurs have IIT as a resource. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody at 1871 even knows that IIT is there. I think that's, you know, we get a hold of something and then we generalize and we want to think that, because we do make a difference, but what is the size of that difference, and how does it play out? People don't go beyond, well, we're at 1871, therefore everyone knows about us, kind of thing. And I couldn't be happier that, you know, Donna is doing a fabulous job, and all the other people who are, you know, working to make it. It's just that it's easy to overestimate.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Sure.
Get out of your own sort of zone and to think bigger that way. One question that we, it's kind of a standard question we ask everybody is, you've turned over documentary material to us, for which we thank you, and we're looking forward to more as you, you know, get further into retirement. But this question is, are there any particular things, whether specific anecdotes or, you know, kind of broader issues that you feel the papers are just not going to speak to? You know, what are things that, you know, you obviously know your papers and you know what the documentation is. What's missing?
I think missing is the impact of the culture at the university on how things can get done.
Okay.
I won't call it low level, but middle level. Mm-hmm. And so a variety of things probably are because of that. But I think initially it was very difficult to be heard. I had something that I thought was of value, you know. So what if, you know, 50% of the students from the Illinois Research and Development Corridor come from Bell Labs? Don't what happens? And this is something that I have to say, the local leaders, Bob Carlson and others, were very aware of. What if something happens to Bell Labs? Well, something happened to Bell Labs, and look, you know. So there's that.
Yeah.
And just in terms of and it's varied through the decades, but and I notice it acutely now, but I think it's been in the past, the lack of responsiveness. And it's I'm by peers, or call peers anybody else who works for the university. I don't put myself on, you know, level with the VPs or whatever, but peers. In order for me to get anything done in the position, the last position I had particularly, I had nobody reporting to me specifically on a chart.
Okay.
But in effect, I looked at everybody at the university as a potential partner in linking up. Nobody else sees it that way. Everybody, and people agree that IIT, and maybe all universities for all we know, are very chimneyed.
Very chimneyed.
Not only do they have their reporting structure, and business does too, and you're rewarded, you know, by what you do for your chimney for your boss.
Right.
But the fact that for at least 10 years I've been reading, in McKinsey or GE or whoever, you know, the leaders are, about collaboration the collaborative teams, that's the buzzword.
Exactly.
But
and it's used quite a bit here. And so, yeah. Therefore, the lack of it oftentimes is perhaps one of the more glaring or the more, one would be quizzical about that.
Yeah, and I don't know what those collaborative teams are. I know, you know, we've always had committees where you bring somebody from humanities and somebody from IFISH and, you know, you talk about something, get something done. Mm-hmm. That's not exactly what I'm referring to. I'm referring to more of a collaborative spirit, which plays out in an actual collaboration. And not only a collaboration that's designated, this is a collaboration, so we're going to do this, but one that is germane to the work that is being done in these different places, but it is brought to bear along with other like kinds of things in a different or new purpose, in other words, corporate relations for
one. Right, yeah. It's a philosophic question. How much of that do you think is a reflection of IIT, and how much of it is a reflection of changes in American culture from the 1970s onward?
I think it's both. IIT has always had a very internally kind of competitive, in not a good sense, you know? Like, if I do this for you, then what is that going to mean from my work, or what are you going to do for me, or, you know? Yeah. And I get it. And, you know, I've always tried to, you know, have a benefit available, but it's you can't get something started, a collaboration, unless somebody has that perspective of willingness.
Yeah, you've got to invest something.
And I'm not. I would never ask somebody to do something just for my benefit. Mm. These things are supposed to be for mutual benefit. And if I can't even get somebody to respond, or, you know, it takes six times in, you know, 10 weeks, then I feel in my down moments, I yell at them in my mind saying, you're keeping me from doing my job, you know. But it's in effect sometimes that is what actually happens. So.
Yeah, right. Would you feel confident in terms of venturing on the national scene? I mean, you're obviously a comprehensive thinker in many ways, and how the business models becoming more efficient, less efficient, more collaborative, less collaborative? How does is IIT just rather typical of that?
I don't have enough experience to say what's typical or not.
Yeah, I know you do.
I think for universities, it may not be far from the mark.
Okay.
I think sometimes, as I've kind of alluded to, we're our own worst enemy by trying to focus so much on singular events rather than doing the hard work. I use the image of a spider web a lot, because that is something that I heard in a different context long ago, and it just makes sense to me. And corporate relations is, you know, not saying here's the spider web, but it's, you know, if this works, you know, with somebody from X company, that is one thread. And, you know, if we can get things going, and especially leverage things that already exist, we can, you know, put more threads in place and ultimately have this relationship either with an industry as a whole, various companies, or, you know, a combination of some sort.
Yeah.
Ganesh Raman, who left to go to the California system as Vice President for Research, said, because he worked for Dennis Roberson, who was my boss, he was Vice Provost there, and he acknowledged to me before he left that he had no idea until he became integrally involved in the relationship with Zebra Technologies, which took basically 8 years to come to a steady state where we had an acknowledged liaison, and that things, you know, there was a type of agreement in place that would allow, and this was legal, you know, that would allow interactions without taking 6 months to frame every single one. He had no idea that that building relationships and then keeping them going, and that's just one company, and we have 15,000 companies in the database, which in the matrix database, which are companies that that somebody in the university has worked with at a certain time, and to either at least know enough to talk with them and try to get something going, if not have an actual project going. So you can see that, and this is off base, but if the university wants something to succeed, they have to understand what it takes, and then despite all of our lack of resources and money and everything, putting me in the role of corporate relations director was kind of an experiment, or, well, we don't know what to do with her, so let's, you know, she's been doing this kind of thing, let's just, you know, see. But once you're in that role, you realize very quickly what other universities, because there's the National Association for Corporate Relations Officers, NACRO, and so there's all kinds of information, some of it, much of it known, but certainly helpful, and still a lot of questions, but it becomes obvious that, you know, you can't assign 1.5 people to try and do everything, this you know, whole basket of things that I described at the beginning in 4 or 5 categories, and, you know, follow up meaningfully and all of that. And so then it becomes, well, she didn't do anything. I mean, not that bad, but, you know, what have you done, or what have you done for me lately? Well, there's certain things to point to, which, going back to Ganesh, you know, maybe did take 3 years or 8 years or whatever it is to come to a steady state or to get something of significance going. And it's very hard without the resources devoted.
Yeah, certainly without the resources. And then, as the first President Bush said, the vision thing. And I have a sense that it's not unique to IIT, but you see it in a lot of places where there's just the sort of repeating the same exercise about, okay, what are these sort of things that we can trot out or put forward and not look at, try to infuse a bigger sense of mission and vision that people will then self-identify how they can feed into that vision and that program. And it seems, agree or disagree or don't comment, but we're at another one of those moments in IIT's history where maybe perhaps we've come certain cycles, and now what's the next vision, and how can we truly get people on board, not by giving them specific assignments per se, but, you know, communicating that vision and sharing, and then the resources will be found. So
we've kept you a little longer than we had originally asked, but so I guess thinking about kind of turning a corner towards a close here. I'm interested, you know, you've spoken a couple of times about how you you weren't quite like everyone else, and even, you know, you saying that people were having some form of that question in their head of like, what's she doing over there? What would you hope that your legacy is here?
If there were to be such a thing, which I doubt, I would say that, you know, I tried to bring what I understood to be an important aspect of higher ed, and an increasingly important one. Since 2000, there's been much written about how higher ed is in a battle for its existence, but 90% of the people in higher ed have no clue that it's going on. But I guess I cite that because it sort of supports what I've tried to do and bring an understanding. It's absolutely critical going forward that the university works in a mutually beneficial way, not give me money, you know, from a company, but in a mutually beneficial way. And that encompasses many, many things. But unless they decide how they can do that, they're going to be left behind. I really believe that. And that would be such a shame. Because, again, the word potential comes up. Did that answer?
It did, yeah. Great.
And also, even though we're tending toward the end, could open the floor to you. I mean, anything that you want to say that, for the record and for your own, you know, biography or whatnot that we've not touched upon, and, you know, things that we've just totally missed.
Well, I don't think you've totally missed anything. It's a privilege to be able to share some of these things, because most people aren't interested. You know, they're doing their job, and that's what's important to them. And we all see you're doing your job. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to go home and ponder, well, how did he do that? You know, that kind of thing. And everybody, if you don't think your job is important, then, you know, you better go somewhere else. So I've liked to think that I've had jobs, but I do understand that some of them have been created for me because they didn't necessarily want to fire me, but they didn't know what to do with me. And at a small university, there are only so many AVPs that exist, you know. And so, and I understand that. And position was never, I would have liked it, but position was not a driving factor for me. Just put that in there. I really wanted to make a difference. Of course, that's kind of my life motto. And I think for a while I might have. I don't think it's anything that's going to carry forward necessarily. But maybe for that while, it was part of the overall course of the university. And
That's great, and we certainly we're looking forward, and at the conclusion here, very grateful that you spoke with us, because we knew it would be a great conversation, and thank you for coming and having it with us.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. As I said before, it's totally unexpected, and it is very appreciated, because it's probably the one place where I've had a chance to put a lot of these thoughts and vision and memories and so on together. So
great. Thank you.
Thank you.